We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Untangle, the meditation podcast from Gaiam. I'm your host, Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who've devoted their lives to teaching and helping others through meditation. In today's episode, I sat down with Lois Shannon. Lois was a high-powered executive holding jobs with Bain & Company and Apple, but she always felt like something was missing. After the birth of her children, she discovered what had been holding her back and began a mindfulness practice to help her better nurture her kids and herself. This is her story. Lois Shannon, it is so great to have you here today. Thank you so much for coming in.
I'm so happy to be here. I've been really looking forward to this. So thank you.
Yeah. I want to just ask you this question. If you had to describe your 10-year-old self, how would you describe that little girl?
Oh, great question. I think I would probably describe her as slightly lost, fairly insecure, feeling like there was something that she needed to do in the world and she didn't know what that was. I always felt like I was supposed to do something really important. And it really terrified me. My mother used to say that to me at night. You're my special one. You're going to do something special.
Where did that come from? How did she know that?
I don't know. And I know she meant it with so much love and affection and that she wanted me to feel empowered by it. And it did the exact opposite. It made me always feel like I was supposed to know what this thing was. And so I went through most of my teen years searching. I really had lots of depression and seriously down moments from that because I felt this pressure that I had to perform, that there was something I was supposed to do. I guess there was also this feeling that I wasn't acceptable just as I was, that there was something that I had to achieve in order to be worthy.
So then you become a young adult and you achieve these amazing things. You work as a management consultant at Bain. You work at Apple. You become this super high-powered professional woman. And what does it feel like inside to be that woman?
I think that was maybe one of the most difficult things is that I was in the Wall Street Journal as like one of the top 30 businesswomen in Europe. And so by all definitions, I should have felt like I made it, right? I should have felt like I succeeded, I accomplished it. And I felt completely empty inside. I couldn't figure out what was missing.
I want to turn back the clock for 2 seconds. Why did you go into business versus some service, given your inklings as a
Another
teen?
Great question. That I came from a family of intellectuals. Both of my parents were professors, teachers at the university. And my sister was the intellectual. I'm from a family of 5 girls. I'm the middle of 5 girls. And I felt like my other sisters had those spots. And so I had to find a spot for me. What was I going to do? And from a very young age, I used to count my pennies. I babysat and did newspaper runs. And I counted my money. And my mother used to say to me, you're going to be a banker. That's what you're going to do. You're going to be a banker. And so I think I subliminally adopted that I was like, okay, I'm going to go into business. And there was nobody else in the family that was a business person. And so that was going to be my thing.
So you abandoned the service aspect temporarily?
Yeah, that's so interesting that you say that, because maybe that's why I always felt a little lost, that I went outside of the family structure of the system. My mother used to say to me, why are you in business? Everybody in business is trying, she was from the South, everybody in business is always trying to put the other person out of business. It's just a complete waste of time. So there wasn't actually a lot of value for it in my family. So it's interesting that I chose to do something that searching for how I was going to be worthy and be valued, and it still didn't fulfill me. It didn't make me feel good.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of us go through that where we choose our careers based on some monetary reward or some intellectual pursuit, and then we feel a little bit empty inside. Did you go through that as you, even though you were moving up and up and up the corporate ladder and you were having enormous success, you said you felt a little bit still lost inside? And
I felt like an imposter. I felt like I was in a man's world. In most cases, I really was. I was often the only woman. And I felt like I wasn't living my truth and that there was a lot of pretending and there was a lot of hiding. And the insecurity drove me to perform because I would work all weekend and work all night and do everything to make sure that I could achieve. And there was something about it that just felt like it was wrong. It wasn't where I was supposed to be.
When was that moment where you said, this has got to stop? Was it meditation that drove you to that? What was that pivotal moment where you went from there to here?
To where I am now. I have to say that was all about mothering.
Mm-hmm.
That it was really fine for me to live that way until I had my kids. And I had my children fairly late. I had three kids in 4 years. My motherhood was just like my jobs. I was like, okay, the same intensity. I'm going to do it all at once. And I did have a full-time nanny. We were living in London, and I wasn't with my kids at all. And they called my nanny mom. And I really did kind of wake up one day and say, okay, if I'm really going to be a mother, I need to be a mother.
What day was that? Like, why that day did you wake up, and what happened? Were your children okay? Was there a crisis in the family? Was there a problem with it?
I don't know at that moment if I can really even pinpoint it. It was this inner calling. Like it was almost like a voice in my head that just said, Lois, you're going to wake up someday and realize that you were never a mother to your kids. And I think also my mother was wonderful, and she achieved a lot. She was a very accomplished woman. And at the same time, she was never present for us. And I thought, you know, that's the one thing that I don't want to do to my kids. I want to be present for them. And I don't want to miss the experience of being a mother.
So was it a clean break? You stopped working and you became a mother of three and you stayed at home and everything was happily ever after?
No, I was, no, because it's never happily ever after. Well, I was working the full time when I had my first two kids, and then I had Ella and my little girl, and I did stay home for 6 months with her. And I think that was really the break. The other two, I went back to work almost immediately. And I think with Ella, I thought, you know, Lois, don't miss out. And so I did stay home, and it's going to make me cry. You know, I breastfed her and all those things that
wonderful.
I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so then I thought, no, I just don't want to miss out on this whole experience. And so we decided to move to the south of France and raise the kids, and I became a full-time mom.
Wait, you were in London, then you moved
to
the south
London.
Of France?
Yeah,
and you
we were in
a
London,
mom.
And I became a full-time mom when we moved to the south of France. And that was all beautiful. And then I had the biggest challenge of my life, actually, Patricia, was that I have a son who really suffers from anxiety and OCD.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
diagnosed when he was older, or you noticed it when you were home?
That's finally, the interesting thing is that I was with him. And in France, unlike the United States, they do not diagnose for kids. They don't put labels. There's no ADD, OCD, any of that. They never give drugs to children. And so I took him to many psychologists, and they all had different theories and ways of working with him. And then finally, 5 years ago, he was 8, and we had a crisis at Christmas. I'd changed schools, put him in a new school so he could start fresh, and he was spitting so much to try and get rid of the germs that he was spitting on his clothes, and he was spitting all over the house and on the furniture and on the floor, and the kids at school wouldn't sit next to him because he smelled, and the teacher was calling me and saying, you know, this is really not good. And again, I was like, okay, my whole career, I've been able to fix things. I've been able to succeed and make things okay. And suddenly, I couldn't make it okay for my kid. So I got on the web, and there was nobody in France that was going to be able to help me. So I got on the web, and I found the OCD Center in London. So literally on the web. We went and did a 5-day intensive therapy, group therapy, with caregivers and the patients. I mean, my son was just in such crisis. I mean, really in crisis. And after 3 days in this intensive therapy, which I would love to tell you some of the stories, because they made us go through the shame. OCD is a shame disease, and it's an addiction to comfort. So they can't deal with discomfort. So they do the tics to try and make the discomfort go away. And we had to do all kinds of crazy things, like go into the tube station as the parents to understand what our kids experienced. I had to go into the tube, and I had to ask people where London was. And then I had to get on the tube, and at Green Park, I had to scream out, Sloane Square, and everybody looks at you like you're crazy. And so the idea was to feel the shame, to feel the idea, that you were crazy, and that there was something wrong with you, that there's something wrong with you.
And that's what your son was feeling.
That's what he was feeling. So this discomfort of always not feeling good in your skin and not feeling good with who you are.
And not being able to change it.
And not being able to change it. So anyway, on the third day, I wrote an email to this woman who was the facilitator. And I said, look, I spent all this money and I came here for you to fix my son. And I barely made it here. And there's absolutely no way I can go home, because I knew that I had succeeded in so many things, Patricia. But the one thing that I was totally failing at was being a mom. I really felt that way. And I thought, I can't have my son keep suffering like this with no one to help him. I have to be able to help him. And so I wrote her this flaming email about all the things that she hadn't done right. And that
the business person.
Yeah, I was
you.
Like, you told me this and you told me that. And I've paid all this
Why
money.
Why haven't you fixed this yet?
I've paid all this money and I didn't get my return. And I came down for the session in the morning, and she looked at me and she said, Lois, I got your email. And she said, I'm wondering if you would be willing to read it to the group. It's really OCD.
Wow.
Patricia, takes your breath away. And it was in that moment that I really realized something had to change. It was okay for me to live a life of lies and pretend, but it wasn't okay to do it to my kids. So that led to 5 years of intensive therapy for me. Of a lot of somatic work, a lot of mindfulness. And for me, mindfulness really is about paying attention to our present moment experience with openness and curiosity and a willingness to just be with whatever arises. And I realized that I couldn't be with anything in my being. There was a lot of stuff that I've been running from for a long time.
When you first started learning mindfulness, so you went back to the south of France, but you had this newfound awareness of, whoa,
this is about me.
This is about me.
Yeah.
And you started learning mindfulness. And what kind of awareness did that bring to your OCD issues?
Well, that was the beautiful thing, is that suddenly I could see my own OCD and how many times I had such crazy anxiety about things, and I would hold on to things, and I had obsessive thoughts, and I had lots of things that I wanted to be different.
So what changed for you? What was it about meditation that shifted that awareness?
Well, the practice of meditation is sitting with whatever arises and really making friends with it. I remember when I first started meditating, I felt like I was going to the dinner party, and they said to me, you've got to sit next to that person. And I thought, oh, my God, I'll sit next to anyone but that person. I have nothing to say to that person.
My name's Dwayne Osterlin. I'm host of the Addicted Mind podcast. Are you ready to uncover the science of breaking addiction? Then join me on the Addicted Mind, where compassion meets innovation. We're going to explore real stories of addiction recovery, hear from real experts on science-based treatment, and you'll be able to equip yourself with the tools for lasting change. So whether you're on the road to recovery yourself or walking alongside someone who is, the Addicted Mind podcast is your companion. So check it out. Subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using right now and be part of the conversation that's changing lives.
I was addicted to being busy. I was addicted to performing. I was addicted to being outside of myself all the time. And so mindfulness was the first time that I really had to sit still with myself, and I couldn't run.
So we've described how you felt before.
Right.
How would you describe yourself after?
Well, I'll give you a little story that happened recently with my son, William. I was making lunch for him, and I prepared all the food, and I put it in front of him. And he's 13 now. And so he pushed the food away and said, Mom, I cannot eat that. And he said, you spit all over it. It's got germs. And in the past, I would have denied his experience. I would have told him he was wrong. And I would have defended myself and said, don't be ridiculous. Of course, I didn't spit on the food. And there's nothing wrong with your food. Just eat the food. And it would have exploded into an argument. And he would have gotten, very hurt, because a lot of times I made it his fault. It was all his fault. And I closed my eyes and I said, Lois, what's your experience? And I could feel my chest tighten, and I could feel the frustration, and I could feel the anger, and I could feel the shame that I had a son who was so disrespectful and who was talking to me like that, and all of the things that were always present for me but that I could never admit. And I sat there for a few minutes just breathing and experiencing all that. And then I opened my eyes and I looked at William and I said, Is there any possibility you could eat the food? Is there something you could do that would make it okay? Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, Mom, if I just scrape off the top, then the germs will be gone and I can eat it.
So it's such a moment of being at peace with each other.
Totally, Patricia. I mean, really, in that moment, first of all, it was like magic, because my whole body released, and so did his. And I realized how many times I had created so much suffering for both of us, because I wasn't able to be present for my own experience.
You were trying to control the situation versus letting
him be.
Fix,
control. Yeah. Like, there was no acceptance in any of it. And so I think after lots of years of practice, what's happened for me is that magic moment that I can now see, when I can just be present with my own experience, it gives so much space for me to be present with my kids, with theirs. And as a mother, I'm not sure there's any other act of love that we could ever give our kids.
I mean, the conflict just goes away, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're not reacting quickly, they're not reacting quickly. And so you have that moment where there's a pause before anybody's reacting.
And then the relationship. I mean, now my daughter, who's 12 and going through puberty, she talks to me about everything, because she knows I'm not going to judge her and tell her, fix it, tell her what's wrong. My kids used to always feel that if they told me something, the first thing I was going to do was react.
So mindfulness really changed your life, literally. Changed your parenting. It changed your feelings as a mother.
It changed my relationship with everyone. And it changed my ability to give and receive love, Patricia. It's as simple as that. I mean, as long as I was defended and protecting and controlling, there was no space.
Yeah.
As I said, I started my whole life was all about accomplishing and performing. And this idea of just being with, or just being, was so foreign to me. So it's taken me a long time to move from this practice of moving from fixing to accepting. Mm-hmm. And when you move into that acceptance, I think it's Carl Rogers who has a quote that says, you know, really, you can't ever change anything until you fully accept it. And I didn't understand that. I was always jumping to the, I've got to change it.
Do you have a favorite quote or some inspirational
saying that
you love?
Because for me, it really is all about love. And the one that I put on the bottom of my email for a long time is that when the power of love is greater than the love of power, we will have peace.
That's so beautiful.
We have to give it up to regain it.
Lois, what a beautiful story, and you've told it so eloquently. Thank you so much.
I love sharing my story for, you know, the mere fact that I have to confess, Patricia, I suffered a lot, and my kids suffered a lot. And if we can all learn from experiences from each other so that we can eliminate some of the suffering, that would be a beautiful thing.
Thanks so much to Lois, and thank you all for listening. If you'd like to know more about Lois's efforts to support other women like her, check out her website at thewomansnetwork.com. I hope you found Lois's story compelling, and we look forward to sharing more inspiring stories on our next episode. If you have feedback or suggestions for stories, email us at untangle@gyam.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio by Gyam, our app in the App Store. See you next time.